Hello, and welcome to Intrepid Heroes Presents, a podcast where we chat about various topics related to role-playing games, typically Paizo products such as Pathfinder and Starfinder, but also others. With me today is Hillary Moon Murphy. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks.
So, Hillary is a venture captain for the online region, though I hear you're stepping down from that at the end of the year?
Yeah, November 1st.
Right. Oh, yeah, so even sooner than that. She's also a published Paizo author and a recent campaign coin recipient, and now is freelancing.
Yeah, that's right.
So, well, first of all, I want to say congratulations. It seems like I see you and your name everywhere online, so I can see why you are received the coin. It's at Gen Con, it was too bad that you weren't able to receive it in person, but I saw on your Facebook posting how everybody's saying congratulations, and you're like, oh, what happened? What happened? So,
yeah, it was a very funny night. I was home working on stuff with the kids, and all of a sudden my daughter turns to me and says, Mom, can you do something about your phone? It's going nuts. And I pick up my phone, and it's going, bing, 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 bing. And I look, and there's like literally 20 posts that all say variants of woo and yay and about time. And I had no idea what it meant.
there was no warning at all for this.
There was no warning. Wow. And so that was why I posted on Facebook, Gen Con, what just happened? Because I knew something had happened, because 20 different people who I all knew were at Gen Con had basically texted me at the same time. So,
well, that's still, I think that's quite an accomplishment, because there have not even been two dozen people like have received campaign coins. So it's, I think they're up to 20, just around 20-ish.
No, it's more than that.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's actually about 100.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah.
I was looking at the 800 numbers. I didn't know.
They started off at 700.
Oh,
and,
okay. Got it.
Yep.
Yeah,
and it's, so there are quite a few people who've received it, and they receive it for all kinds of reasons. I mean, there's all kinds of ways you can contribute to the campaign, but some of the notable people who, you know, may have received it were people who created websites that help everybody. The first creator of PFS Prep received one, which was a great prep website GMs. The one that helps everybody figure out what game they can all be in, where it's the session tracker.
PFS tracker, yeah.
Yeah, I use that all the time. Yeah, and okay. I think that was a very worthy thing. Or, you know, it could be just simply helping on a major project. I mean, locally, a number of our folks got it for the charity con that they've worked on.
Right. Cool.
Which is where we are right now, SkullCon.
Yeah, I was actually hoping to have Jack on to talk more about SkullCon as well.
Well, I'm just going to say in my thing briefly, SkullCon rocks.
Yeah,
and that's and then you can let Jack talk endlessly about the rest of it. But well, SkullCon rocks.
Everybody was talking about it. That's why I decided I had to come here this year. This is
a part of our plan, our devious plan.
Excellent. So, as the outgoing venture captain for online, can you tell me a little bit about some of the online gaming opportunities people have? You were mentioning a little bit before about Play by Post.
Yes, Play by Post is my home format. That's the one that I'm the venture captain of. I will say that currently there are three different modes in organized play for online gaming. This is not even counting Kingmaker and things like that. But for the organized play version of it, we've got basically VTT, which is basically what most people think of when they think of online gaming. That's where you've got a bunch of friends in real time playing a game, but they're separated over distance with a computer and have digital maps. There is the ACG online now, where it's basically the card game and you can play it online, and Tyler Beck is your contact for that. And then there's Play by Post, which is a really old format. It used to be Play by Mail a long time ago.
Right.
And it is played, generally speaking, over a forum or a Discord channel. And it's written out. Everybody writes them about themselves in the third person as if it were a novel that was unfolding. And that's usually how I describe play-by-post games. I describe them as being the book equivalent. If you consider a regular gaming experience that's face-to-face, the movie, Play by Post is the book. You get interior monologue. You get all of the emotions and backstory behind what somebody is doing. You even get flashbacks sometimes where somebody will post a complete and total flashback.
Oh, for a backstory or something.
Of a previous moment that they feel that their character would have expected. And so they'll post that thing, this, you know, usually really detailed, in-depth flashback, and then they'll zap back into the present moment and have the reaction. The reaction may be only a sentence whatever it is. But they've enriched it by providing this flashback of a previous experience. You build relationships. One thing that I love about the play-by-post region is just how many people are really creative and how international it is.
I was just talking to Gavin from Australia, and he's like in the middle of nowhere, and he says almost everything is play-by-post for him.
Yes. So. Yeah. Of my region, I would say about a third of them are pure online, like Gavin, where they started out and online was their only gaming. Even if, and I have several people who have weird time zones, so they may be in the middle of a busy metropolitan area, but because of their time zones, you know, because they have like a third shift job, or they're a stay-at-home mom, with young children, or, you know, some other thing is preventing them from actually getting out into the gaming stores or being able to make those face-to-face game times. And so Play by Post becomes a wonderful outlet for them because it's asynchronous. And that's, you know, why you can play in... I've had games where we've had people in Australia, Asia, Europe. When we were running a special... the Cosmic Captive special. We were having a forum outage on Paizo, and it was very interesting because people from certain parts of the world could get through and people from other parts of the world couldn't. And this became actually useful information for the IT department. We wound up feeding department, and that helped them search out the bug because I was able to tell them what countries the people were coming from that could get through. Because we were aware. Yeah. And it just, but it's a wonderful international community, and people bring their talents and their perspectives. And I love that there's a lot more women in Play by Post, I think. And I mean, it's got a higher percentage of female players. It's got a large percentage of people who are just willing to try things. And it also allows you to do characters that you wouldn't otherwise be able to do. Like, my friend Wei Ji felt very comfortable playing his grandmother paladin because he could evince her in writing far better than he could in person. Though I think he's now comfortable enough with Andrietta that he's taken her into real-world gaming as well. But he started out with her in Play by Post, and he just loved being able to bring that grandma feel to it.
So, related to Play by Post, how much time does it take typically, say, during the day when you're playing
player? It depends. The ideal, normal thing that most people cite as a pace for Play by Post is the one post a day, which can be great if it holds to that that timing. And if it's one post a day, you frequently are just, you know, checking in on a lunch hour or a break somewhere else and connecting in. Sometimes it can be a lot faster than that. A lot of my games tend to go to 2 to 3 posts a day because of the speed that I tend to run at, though... The last few months have been hard for me. A lot of real life things, and so all my games slowed down. They were lucky to get that one post a day from me, darn it. But, you know, and you can have games where various people are having real issues, and it can almost feel like you're going in slow-mo.
But a typical game, then, is maybe 1 to 3 posts a day, and then about how long would it take for a player to generate each post?
It depends. I mean, honestly, that depends on you as a writer and on Sometimes, it, and what the post is. So sometimes if you're in the middle of a combat, and a lot of people will have their main combat things pre-written out somewhere that where they can cut and paste them. I actually recommend that because if real life hits you and you can't play for a few days and you have to notify your table, hey, I've got a wedding, I've got a real life gig, I've got to travel to this funeral, whatever, the rest of the party can botch you if you've got you've got your botting spoiler on. But the number one person who uses your botting spoiler is actually you. And if you've got some of those pre-composed, that can be very quick, and then you basically put in your combat thing, and then you put in a little bit of color and some banter and other things to go with it. Or it can be this really in-depth thing. I mean, I was in a version of Kingmaker that probably had some of the most beautifully written, in-depth things between the five players that were in it. And it was definitely a novel and moving and beautiful. And I don't know how much time the other players did, but I put in sometimes a lot of time into each of those posts.
Well, it sounds like there might be some peer pressure, too, if you see everybody else crafting these wonderful responses. It's like, oh, I can't just drop a one-liner there. That's not going to look right.
Yeah, there is. You definitely will step up your game. And so some games are light and silly and fun and quick. I mean, it's just like a, hey, and those can be romps. I mean, and some games can be more in-depth but also be fantastic. And it can be really interesting to just see when there's group chemistry, just how beautiful that is. I had a group that we called the Murder of Crows because I invited an all-tango group just as an experiment to do Murder's Mark. You know, and I called it Murder's Mark of Crows. And, you know, it was interesting to see how that mystery changed with a group of nothing but tango, because the people who wrote it, James Grove and I think Crystal Fraser and stuff, expected that there would be humanoids in that party, that some of the party would blend at certain points. There was no way in heck this group blended. But it was fine, and it became interesting because then I had worked on a different tangent. You know, hey, here are all of these out-of-towners, definitely from out-of-town, definitely from far away. Who's going to gravitate to them? There were freaks from the circus. Maybe they will feel more comfortable with this. And it changed the vibe and the style, but it became a lot of fun. And they got so addicted to the murder mysteries that we wound up doing several modules after it. And it became this thing where the group stayed together for four games, five, where we with that same party. And it was just this beautiful chemistry between the groups. And they loved doing the mysteries. And it became this fun thing for this party to do.
And it sounds like to me that it probably is really good for your writing, doing play by post, because you're kind of, you know, exploring different ways to say things and getting into character, similar to what you might do when you're freelancing then.
Yeah, and it can be really, it's a different kind of writing, especially when you're doing, a lot of what I've been doing for Paizo has been rule stuff. I can talk about the two things that are coming out, are announced. So Alien Archive 3 came out, and I did like three creatures for that. And that was an interesting mix because you had the very, very finicky work of trying to put together the monster stat blocks. And I do love that, you know, I got asked, so can you put together monsters? And I said, oh, absolutely. And I know Joe Puccini may be listening to this, and he's going to laugh his head off, because I immediately turned to Kate afterwards and said, I don't know how to put together a monster. And Kate said, it's okay, I'll help you run through it. I said, you better, because I've just jumped onto the deep end and said I could do something that I don't know if I could do. And it turned out to be a lot of fun. I mean, because you got to create weird special abilities for the creatures, but you also got to write a lot of flavor text for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a great deal of fun writing the flavor text for the Oracles of Oros, which are these mystical trees that, you know, are guardians, ecological guardians. Mm-hmm. And that had, instead of, because they're mostly solitary creatures of their own species, they have tree houses where they have guests.
Oh,
and so
yeah.
instead of it, so when I was yeah. writing their you know, their multiple thing, it was yeah. it was solitary plus treehouse.
Right.
Because, you know, they were quite gregarious with other species.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, you had to come up with, well, okay, if it's mostly good tree, how does a good party battle one? So I talked about, you know, the fact that these trees might offer sanctuary to eco-terrorists or mm-hmm. to a rogue geneticist who provided them with interesting data, or to somebody else. And they take these sanctuaries absolutely seriously. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, they're not going to rescind guest privilege to somebody that they've offered it to.
Right, right, right.
And so, you know, you could have very definitely a good party battling a good tree because of different viewpoints on a thing.
So how much guideline does the developer team give you when you're creating something for, like, Alien Archive 3?
It varies. So sometimes you get something and you get basically... So I got told, in the case of Oracles of Oros, you're doing a mystical tree, some kind of magic tree.
Okay, so that part you already had, right?
That part I already had.
Okay.
They gave me the CR. It had to be this CR.
Right.
They gave me... they told me that they didn't want it to be too much like a tree ant.
Right, right.
And that was it.
Right.
And so I got to do... everything else.
Okay.
And so I immediately came back to them and I said, we haven't done much with Oros at all in this system.
Right.
And he's one of the big 20 gods.
Mm-hmm.
Can I make these guys specifically keyed to Oros? And they have the Xenodruid connection, and that they, you know, they're mystic trees. Well, hey, they're actually mystic trees. And we started, you know, building that up, and, you know, so I shot a few words, and then he's like, oh, great, 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 which was great. And sometimes you get something like, you may be told to stat up some creatures for a AP or something, and they give you complete and total free rein.
Mm-hmm. And have you done that as well for an AP?
Or can you not
announce that yet?
I have not done monsters for an AP.
Okay.
I have done back matter for an AP
that have been.
So I can announce that I did psychic magic because Jason Keeley very kindly stated on Starfinder Wednesday.
I saw that I had done the psychic magic article. Yeah.
Yes. So So I did a psychic magic article, and some of the AP things are very closely, tightly things. You're going to spend this many words on this. You're going to spend this many words on this. Here are some spells we want you to convert. And we need a mystic connection. And sometimes there's a lot more freedom. And it depends on the project. And so they may tell you, hey, build out, you know, this thing. We don't care what it is, but it's got to be related to this. Pitch me something. And then sometimes it's going to be much more specific. And so psychic magic started out fairly specific, but I got to pick what I was doing for my mystic connection. Yay! And, you know, I got to do some other things, you know, convert some spells, play around with things. But converting the spells was the most challenging part. But, you know, it got to be fun. And I got to write a little bit about psychic magic in the system. So, yay.
So how did you get your start freelancing for Paizo? Was it through Wayfinder? I know you were pretty involved with publishing there.
Wayfinder is a great way to get noticed. And I will say straight up that one of my gigs, I think, with Paizo came directly from me doing something for Wayfinder.
Mm-hmm.
They saw something I wrote, and then they contacted me, like 2 days later after the Wayfinder
thing
came out. So I think that there was a connection there. That's my theory. But
is that when the first Starfinder one came out, or before that even?
That was the Starfinder one.
So last year when it came out.
But I got a gig from that. But yeah, I was already one of their freelancers. So, you know, I may have gotten pulled for other reasons.
Right.
Who knows? I started working for third-party publishers, but when I say started working, I did two things. I did an Alien race up for Everyman Gaming, which is now Everybody Gaming.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Agunas and Owen Casey Stevens is basically baby. And I did the Owl-like Jersey, and they are a really fun little race. Whenever I do a campaign mode Starfinder campaign, that's, you know, an AP or something. Mm-hmm. I always tell the players, I will consider anything Paizo and Jersey. This, you know, it's campaign mode. I can bring in my owls. If you want to play one of my owls, they're available to you because, darn it, I want to see them played. And I did up a setting for Landguard for one of their open calls, and I submitted it and got in. And so that was right around Paizo Con that both of those things happened. And I think I gave out business cards to an absurd number of editors at PaizoCon. And then wound up GMing at Gen Con, where I got to meet some of those editors again. Mm-hmm. And Kate was very kind to also say, hey, Hillary just finished this project for Alex, which was great because I had just finished the Jersey. I'd gotten mm-hmm. the Jersey contract, just finished it. So it was out. And that was when I got asked, hey, can you do a monster? And doing a monster is a great place for them to start you off because, you know, statting up a monster requires some creativity. It requires you to think about how these could be used in an adventure. It requires some knowledge of the rules. And it's not something that it's something that they can put together themselves if you completely blow it. Mm-hmm. And if you turn out to blow them off, they're only having to make up for, you know, anywhere from 750 to 1,500 words.
Right.
So it's a good spot to that oftentimes a lot of people will get started with. You know, there's many different routes, and sometimes you are lucky enough to get pulled into one of the big rule books along with a bunch of other authors, and you always get your own little pieces. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a piece, maybe it's two pieces, and you get, you know, some guidance and stuff. When we were doing Alien Archive 3, Joe Pacini was kind enough to offer a workshop online where he brought everybody together on a Discord channel, mm-hmm. and said, hey, I'm going to be doing this at a certain time, Paizo time. And he walked us through the entirety of creating an alien stat block from beginning to end. The different things, what you can leave out, what you can't. What was funny was that most of us by that point had created our monsters, but right. It was good because it gave us this last minute double check of, mm-hmm. oh, I need to include that, or how do I do this? Or, you know, doing the last minute tweaks, or is this too powerful a thing to give my monster? You know, is this... And one of the things that I learned from doing the Alien Archive 3 project was that you can't go wacky enough with creatures. Honestly. Yeah. I mean, you just can't.
So you can push it as... You were pushing as far as you could, and they never pulled you back.
Right. You should absolutely push the envelope. Yeah. Think about game balance. Absolutely. Yeah. But push the envelope, and if you can come up with something that maybe, you know, provides an extra challenge for certain types of players. I mean, like, look at the Jin Soul. They have something that nerfs operatives, mm-hmm. Which is kind of an interesting little side feature to that race. So, I mean, you know, there can be all kinds of things that people come up with. And that's one of the things that I loved is seeing the creativity and the weirdnesses that people came up with.
Did you interact much with the other authors?
Yeah, we had shared a Discord channel. For the big books, what I found is that if you've got like a big book where they're bringing in 20, 30 freelancers, there may be a Discord channel created for that entire project, mm-hmm. Where all of the authors get to ask questions of each other and sometimes get to collaborate. You know, where, hey, there may be multiple things from the same planet, and so you may be actually
make sure they tie together somehow.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so Katina Davis and I, Katina is their store manager now at Paizo. Mm-hmm. She was on customer service at the time. She had the Sacherons, and I had the Durindi. I asked for the Durindi. I love
people really love the Durindi too. So
oh yay! Yeah. I'm so happy to hear that. So I got basically told, you have to create these Durindi, and here's what we know about them. They have three eyes, and they're electrically attuned. Go to it. that's all we knew. Because that's all that had been stated in canon. And so I was like, okay. And I think I could have gone overboard with the whole electrical thing, but I actually became more fascinated with the cultural thing.
Right, right.
You know, it was like my first thought was, okay, I've got this ability to just shoot a little bit of electricity. I'm going to joy buzz my friends for fun. Mm-hmm. And that this is what I'm going to do. It's funny if you know, they don't have, the folks who are in Arcanine just don't understand that other races don't like this. You learn it if you become an adventurer. I mean, I gave them that out. You know, you become an adventurer, you go off planet. Yeah, you're going to learn that other races get annoyed by this pretty quick.
Yeah.
But, you know, you and Arcanine, this is the way you greet each other. And I started spilling out ideas to Katina. And the two of us, and we copied Joe Pacini on all of our emails. Mm-hmm. And the two of us were like spilling out ideas about how the Sazeron were, how the Dorinde were. And I started throwing things and we came up with the lines about, you know, the Dorinde come up with ideas and optimism and energy. And the Sazerons make sure the projects stay on budget, get finished, get done.
All right, well, it's about time to wrap up here for our next session. I will ask, what does the future hold for Hillary?
I'm hoping the future holds more freelancing. It's certainly going to help me GMing in organized play. I'm not giving up on the play-by-post region. My decision to step down actually started at PaizoCon, where, you know, I talked it over with my team. I was getting lots and lots of freelancing. The freelancing deadlines and the being a VO for Arc Play can be a lot of work. And in the online region, it's nonstop. It's 24/7.
Right, because people all the different
it's
time
international.
Zones.
And,
yeah.
You could go to sleep and everything could be fine in your region and wake up to a argument that has been going on all night. Where basically these people have been angry with each other. And, you know, you have to detangle that, and you have to calm people down, and you have to do all the normal things that VOs do. So it is a lot of work. And I've been taking on more and more freelancing gigs, and I just decided that, you know, it was probably time to start transitioning. And so I started prepping the team for it with Derek and the VNTR lieutenants taking on more and more of the work for the convention. And then we just announced it just this week that I was stepping down with a 6-week thing so that my region has a chance to get used to it. Have, you know, if there are people who want me to do an evaluation for them before I go out so that they can get an evaluation from me and then an evaluation from Derek. Because,
yeah.
I mean, there's a limited number of,
right.
You know, I figured that could be a great thing. So we're trying to build in things and make it an easier transition. But I figure I've done a full 3-year second seeker term and put in a lot of energy. And I've accomplished all my goals that I set out to. I mean, I wanted online to be a friendly place. I wanted people to find it easier to come in, try it, experiment with play by post. I wanted to create tools to make it easier. I wanted to create, you know, the community. And all of those modest goals got accomplished. My region is doing really great. And so it seemed like that this would be the time to let go before you get worn out, before you start, you know, losing, you know. You either, if you're staying in something, you either have to have new goals that are pushing you, or you have to change it up a bit. And I've been telling everybody that they're not losing me. I'm still going to be a GM. I'm still going to be heavily involved with my region. But that they may actually, you know, get more freelance work out of me. They may actually even see me more as a GM because I won't be struggling with running a convention at the same time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I'm sure everyone appreciates all the work you've put in, and they are glad that you will continue to be around, but just in a different capacity.
Yeah.
Well, Hillary, thanks so much for participating in our podcast here, and that was awesome. Thanks again.
You're welcome.